You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, zillions of zany, zippy, zesty Z-docs. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 229, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your ridiculously rad ragamuffins riffing and ranting on the radio.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Happy birthday, Colin. Yay.
Oh, thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
Another pandemic birthday. Yep.
That's right. Oh, that's right. They all just kind of blur together now.
Let's start today's episode with a very special Purple Patreon fact. And this is from a very special person Chris and I have met. This is from Mr. Jonathan Kane. And he says, "Hello, fellow trivia files. Been a ride or die GJB fan and now a proud Purple Patreon supporter. I tried to turn GJB into a late night talk show for the Game Show Network back in 2012. Still think it's a great idea. Anyway, I wanted to use my Patreonic podcast placement to plug a charity that is near to my heart, which is FARE Fair, Food Allergy Research and Education, which you can find at foodallergy.org.
I remember that. It was like in LA, right? Or where were you guys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, who worked at, I think, Fremantle at the time, it was his kind of crazy dream to maybe turn Good Job Brain into like a TV venture. But we hung out with him and we learned a lot about whiskey. He's a big whiskey person. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. So here I have a mini quiz written by Jonathan. Here's the question. I need you to write down your answers. The U.S. government, FDA, officially recognizes 9 allergens as the most common and dangerous. Mm. Can you name them?
Ooh, jeez.
So nine of them.
And here's a hint. There's a he has a mnemonic.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Mama Paula trained waffle flipping elephants.
Oh, jeez.
And Susie sang softly.
Okay, that helps. That does help.
Save everybody a step. Here are the letters. MPT WFESSS.
Okay.
Okay. Wow. Ooh, man.
Am I allergic to any of these? I'm not allergic to any of these. My allergies are very strange. I'm allergic to mangoes.
So I know M is not mango. Thanks for the extra tip, Karen.
MPT WFESSS. All right.
Okay.
Answers up, whatever you have.
Okay. Well, okay. So maybe let's go letter by letter.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go letter. M is for
milk.
Milk.
Ah,
it is milk.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yep. Makes sense.
That makes sense. I was like, where's the D for dairy? But yeah. Okay. All right. Milk. All right.
Okay.
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Gotta be peanuts.
Peanuts.
Gotta be peanuts.
Correct.
Okay, all right.
T.
Is it tree nuts?
It is tree nuts.
Oh. I see that on labels all the time. I always see like,
yeah,
you know,
tree nuts.
Yeah, maybe manufactured in a facility, yep, or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
W.
Wheat.
Wheat.
Wheat. Correct.
Okay.
Wheat. F.
Fish.
I put fish.
It is fish. It is fish.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. E.
Eggs.
Eggs.
Eggs. Yes. Okay. So three S's. What are your guesses?
I have shellfish.
Shellfish.
Correct.
Okay.
And then it gets really kind of loosey-goosey on my list from there.
I got soy.
Soy, yes.
Ooh, good.
Okay.
Strawberries.
Sesame.
I have sesame. I couldn't believe it. I was just guessing. Wow.
Oh, man.
That's the only thing I've ever had an allergic reaction to was like...
Is what?
I ate strawberries. I ate a bunch of strawberries when I was a kid once and got like a little mild allergic reaction to it.
Like what happened?
But like I can eat them.
Like,
now.
Did
like,
you poop or is it like...
No. Like the itchy skin.
And one last question. Finally, what is the most common food allergy in children?
Huh.
Pick one out of the list. What do you think?
I'm gonna say dairy milk.
Yeah, I would second that.
Correct. Milk. Mm. It just overtook in the rankings. so just overtook peanuts. Peanuts was number one for a long time.
Just
milk
overtook,
just
it.
Overtook peanuts.
Interesting.
Mm.
Thank you, Jonathan, for being a fan.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. He tried to get Danica McKellar attached to that TV show.
Yes.
He really did his best.
All right. without further ado, let's jump into our general trivia segment, pop quiz, hot shot. Here I have our trusty Genus Edition Trivial Pursuit card. You guys have your Barnyard Buzzers. Let's answer some questions. Blue Edge for geography. What was the traditional name of Iran prior to 1935? Chris.
Persia.
Persia is correct. Mm. Yeah. All right. Pink Wedge for pop culture. Which insect lends its likeness to the name and logo of Lorelei Gilmore's Inn?
Oh, man. This is a Gilmore Girls reference.
Oh, my gosh.
I did not watch this show.
I'm guessing. Is it like a firefly or something?
Oh, you're close. I thought it was a bee. Okay. It is dragonfly. Dragonfly.
Sure.
You sure this is Genus Edition and not a Gilmore Edition?
There's actually 8 questions per card because they talk so fast, right? Yeah.
Yellow Edge. What was Barack Obama's nickname as a child? Colin.
Do they just mean Barry? I mean, is that what they're looking for?
Oh, okay.
For?
All right.
They still call him that as an adult.
Right. Yeah.
I've heard people call him that as an adult, too.
It was like Little Stinker or something. Like, okay.
Turbo.
Turbo would be amazing. Turbo.
Purple Wedge. Stephen King. Stephen King, our favorite. Stephen King's science fiction novel. How do I say this? It's November 22nd, 63 or 11-22-63. Mm-hmm. Chronicles. Right. The attempt to save which historical figure from his untimely death?
Oh, sorry.
That was Dana.
JFK?
JFK. John F. Kennedy. Green Wedge for science. What is the fabled term for the zone around a star where a habitable planet could be found, not too far or not too close? Not too far or not too close.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Chris.
The life halo.
No. Dana.
Is it Goldilocks?
It is there Goldilocks.
There we go. There we go.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Last question on this card. Orange Wedge. Oh, American Pharoah was the winner of which thoroughbred racing trifecta in 2015? As if there's another racing. Is there another racing trifecta? Yeah,
exactly. Right.
Chris. Yeah.
The Triple Crown.
Yes, the Triple Crown. Can you name the 3 races that you have to win to get the Triple Crown?
The Kentucky Derby, the Belmont Stakes, and the Preakness.
Yeah.
Because like at our local quiz, I remember they were really big on which is the shortest, which one comes first, at one point, certainly not now, but at one point, I remember we knew the lengths and the order. Yeah.
They never ask what are the 3. They always ask of the 3, which one has the most horses.
Good job, Rams.
All right.
Has the most.
It's the most horses.
Horses.
People throw the word horses around a lot these days.
Webster Dictionary defines horse.
Quadruped mammal.
But to me, they are magnificent beasts. Yeah.
Ultimately, a horse is a study in contrasts.
So very exciting news. Dana and I got tickets to BTS.
Did you? So excited.
That's a hard ticket to get, right?
Yeah.
I followed all the instructions and got into all the lotteries. And,
It was hard. Lots of levels of lottery to get it. And Karen did it.
And then I remember I texted Dana and she responded like, I'm dying. she's so happy. So excited. And so we're about to, I haven't been to a concert in a long time. With that in mind, this week we're going to talk about things that are loud, things that are sound related. And so this week, let's get loud.
Yes, so loud music is top of mind for me right now. I think about it a lot right now since we got tickets to this concert. I'm very excited.
Every day.
I think about it every
day.
So I decided to do a quiz about loud music. This will be a buzz-in quiz.
All right.
Okay.
I like music.
Yeah.
Yes.
Name all seven members of BTS. Oh, I know.
That's for Karen only.
No. Okay. Name the cutest member of BTS. Dana, oh. Is this just a BTS quiz?
I told my husband I was going to make a music quiz, and he's like, oh, is it about BTS? And I was like, no, I have to like make quizzes that everyone can learn to play.
Either you know zero of the answers to a BTS
or you know
quiz,
all of the answers to a BTS quiz.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. So this one, I tried to make it fair to everybody. All right, here we go. In 1976, which English rock group entered the Guinness Book of World Records for performing the loudest concert in history at the time?
Wow, you guys all know?
Well, I mean,
I think
they incorporated this into their kind of their legend. I'm pretty sure that was The Who.
It was The Who.
Okay.
They got the record in 1976 and it stood until 1984. Their sound was registered at 126 decibels, 100 feet from the speakers.
Mm.
So that's louder than thunder. Thunder is usually 120, and so they're 126.
Doesn't sound very enjoyable.
No, but it was an outdoor theater. And so people have broken that record indoor theaters and plaster falls off the walls. That's how loud it is.
Oh,
yeah. or they do it outdoors and it's louder than that. And like in New Zealand, the Foo Fighters did it and it was registering as earthquakes or volcanic activity. It was moving the earth. That loud is very bad for your hearing. Peter Townsend and Roger Daltrey from The Who both have a lot of hearing problems and
Oh my God, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
The Guinness Book of World Records doesn't make that a record anymore. They don't want people to try to beat it because it's...
Yeah, it's like the fattest cat. Yeah, yeah. They don't want people overfeeding their...
Exactly, yeah, it's a fat cat kind of record. Like, okay, yeah, I guess you win, but you've...
Yeah, we don't want to encourage you to, right? Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer Lopez's song Let's Get Loud was originally written by another Latina singer-songwriter who's responsible for a number of popular party anthems. Karen.
I want to say Shakira, but I'm going to say Gloria Estefan.
It's Gloria Estefan. Yes. She said it was too similar to some of her other songs. And I looked and I was like, oh yeah, she had like Conga, Get On Your Feet, The Rhythm's Gonna Get You, Turn the Beat Around. Like she has a lot of like party jams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one is just kind of also another party jam. But it worked out real well for Jennifer Lopez. She got a great party jam out of it. So
it's great to be at that point in your career where you can kind of just be like, no, you know what? I've had enough hits. You can take this hit. It's fine. Yeah, right. You have this one. Yeah.
All right. The Black Eyed Peas song Pump It is about playing music loudly, you know, pump it louder, that song.
Yes.
That was embarrassing. Okay. It features a sample from Dick Dale's 1962 surf version of Miserloo.
Mm.
And the surf version is also heavily featured in a Quentin Tarantino movie. Heavily featured. What movie is that?
Oh.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I think it's Miserloo.
I watched a YouTube video about how to pronounce Miserloo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And somebody said Miserloo, but they said it quickly. And I was like, that's good enough. And I didn't do any further research, but I'm told it's also pronounced Miserloo. And I believe it. I don't know how to pronounce it. But it's
what does it mean?
It's a Eastern Mediterranean folk song.
Oh.
So Dick Dale did a surf version of it that was real hot. Okay. Last question. In 2005, MythBusters did a show with Jamie Vendera, a singer and vocal coach. For the first time, someone was able to capture video footage of a human doing what feat with their voice?
Oh, I'm guessing.
I heard a horse.
I remember this one.
Colin.
I saw this one. I think it's the one he was a singer and they got him to actually shatter the glass, right? They had him in the studio and he did it he did it more than once, if I remember the episode. Like it was reproducible.
It took him 12 tries and you have to sing really loud. You have to hit the exact right frequency.
Yeah.
The glass has to have the right kind of imperfections in it that you're able to match.
Oh.
So you have to be very good, very lucky, very loud. But you can do it. I mean, it took till 2005 to get it on camera for the first time.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Very That's really amazing. That's really, yeah.
I wonder who was the first person to do that and make it a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, what were the conditions that happened?
Yeah.
Was it just a person singing in a kitchen and then like things started breaking.
Or like an opera singer and people.
Yeah, had that's what my guess would be. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It would have to be because you do have to sing very loudly. Yeah. And it takes a lot of training to get to that point.
This is a little bit off topic, but the most memorable Mythbusters episode for me was they're trying to bust the myth of a torture method where people would tie a living person onto an empty bamboo field and wait for the bamboo to grow through the person.
I remember that one. That was gruesome.
And they had to make like a fake
ballistics gel torso, right?
Yeah. And it's amazing. You just see these bamboos like popping up.
It makes me shiver just thinking about it again. Yeah.
Every time I see bamboo, that's all I think of. I was like, oh my God, that can grow through a person who's alive. Anyways.
On that happy note, yeah. So yeah, you know, Dana, I'm glad you mentioned some of those like decibel level marks to peg it at. But when I was doing some research for the show, even though I already knew what I wanted to talk about, I was like, you know, I want to go find some good kind of just decibel chart comparison things. As I think most of our listeners know, the unit of measuring basically how loud is a sound, the amount of sound energy is the decibel. So I went and found a chart. There are a lot of charts out there that have some common noise sources and how they would measure on a decibel level. So
yeah, give us some examples.
Yeah, breathing would be like 10 decibels. Sorry, so 10 decibels is just barely audible. Okay. And because the way the decibel scale works is every 10 additional decibels is basically twice the previous level. Okay, so it scales up really fast. Bird calls can be 40, 45 decibels. Okay. Conversation in a restaurant, maybe 60 decibels. Garbage disposal or, you know, factory noise or, you know, a plane flying overhead, maybe 80 decibels.
Okay.
The human kind of the pain threshold, they say, is around 110 decibels, as Dana was alluding to. So, yeah, a thunder would be around 120 decibels. A jet, if you were standing right next to a jet taking off, that would be around 150 decibels. And that's also around the level that I noticed that almost all of the charts that I found stop. And they stop right around 150 decibels because that is also right around the level where it will rupture your eardrums. And the concept of noise past that really kind of loses meaning in terms of in a human scale, right? I remember as a kid in one of my many trivia books, one of these trivia little lines I saw said, "The loudest event in human history was the explosion of the volcano Krakatoa in 1883. You know, and that's it. And they kind of just laid it to one line factoid. And I filed that away, the loudest event in human history. Now, what is Krakatoa? Where is Krakatoa? Is in Indonesia. It is in the Sunda Strait.
Is it still there?
So the spot is still there, okay? So for many, 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 many thousands of years, developing there was a volcanic island that went by many names over the years, many various spellings, but we've all sort of settled on Krakatoa. As long as people had lived in the region, this island, you know, is a little cluster of islands like most of Indonesia. It was active on and off, you know, above, you know, major kind of tectonic
scares
plate
me,
activity.
Man. Mm-hmm.
It is frightening. Boy, you know, Karen, I will
freak me out.
I'm not going to lie. The more I read about the explosion of Krakatoa, there's just some really scary stuff that could not be captured in one line in my little trivia book. it was an active volcano on and off for thousands of years. And people lived on Java, Sumatra for thousands and thousands of years. There was at least one pretty well documented eruption in 1680, but there's no doubt it's been active on and off. Java and Sumatra and the islands around there are very busy, have been a center of the global spice trade for hundreds of years. And in fact, that's what first led to the Dutch government and Dutch corporations setting up shop out there. There were a lot of people there. It was very, very active, busy port. It wasn't like it was a secret that it was a volcano, but people were not, you know, intimidated or frightened about living there, even though
that's crazy.
Even though every couple hundred years, at least, you know, it could erupt. And
Colin, I have to say, we live in a place that has horrible earthquakes.
Yep, exactly.
And we're like not even thinking about exactly. moving away from it.
Exactly. Okay. That's right. You know, it's like kind of wherever you live in the world, you got to choose your natural disaster. Yeah. I mean, like for me personally, I don't know. I can deal with earthquakes, but like tornadoes freak me out. And I think there are probably people who are the other way. And yeah, so as I say, so Krakatoa, the volcano, the island volcano, as for its most notable eruption, this loudest event in human history, tantalizing, let's just set the scene here. So below Krakatoa, there are two tectonic plates. They have been slowly but surely sliding into each other at a rate of about 4 inches a year for...
Oh, that's a lot!
That's a lot. And it builds up a lot of pressure. And that's why the volcano and the volcanoes in the region have a continuous supply, you know, ultimately of energy to kind of keep going. And you know, it's really interesting. Like even before... really reliable human records, they can go back and look at the geologic record around the world to see where major eruptions have happened, because, you know, it deposits ash hundreds of miles away, and you can find these, you know, thin layer of ash in the rock formations, and you can see, oh, okay, it happened roughly this time. Reduced growth on tree rings also is a really good indicator of intense, like global level volcanic activity, because you get so much ash and smoke and dust up into the atmosphere that it creates wintry, you know, night effects. Trees don't grow as fast. And so they can go back and look. And if there's a tree from the area, they can see, oh, the rings are this close together. As a kid, when I read this fact of, oh, the explosion of Krakatoa, it's like, you know, it's just as if it's just out of the blue. It just one day, it just, you know, blows its top. And of course, that's not really how most volcanoes erupt. Like it actually unfolds over days, weeks, months. You can see smoke coming. If you're in a high earthquake region, you can have increased earthquake activity. And that was what happened in the case of the 1883 huge explosion with Krakatoa, that as far back as May of that year, they had noticed ash and smoke kind of rising up from this cone on Krakatoa. I mean, and it started freaking some people out, but kind of business kept going. I mean, they were still running the ships in and out of the port. I mean, they had money to make. I mean, it's not, and there were whole villages and thousands of people living there. It's not like they were just going to get, you know, up and move. They would run basically sightseeing trips out to kind of witness, you know, get a little closer and see the smoke, and punctuated every, you know, so often every couple of weeks, there would be sort of a semi-major event that would kind of really grab people's attention, whether it's an earthquake or a particularly loud eruption. All right, so the day before this ultimate cataclysmic event, so the day before, this is Sunday, August 26th, 1883, there was, to that point, the kind of biggest pre-eruption or pre-explosion from Krakatoa, raining down chunks of hot pumice. I mean, and I should mention at this point that leading up to the weeks to this, there was rock and stuff coming out. By some accounts, it was a sea of stone kind of coming through the strait there by Krakatoa. You could drop a bucket off the side of your ship, pull it up, and it might have more pumice than water, I read in one account. Wow. I think everyone in their mind, that they weren't totally ignorant of what a volcano could do, but they really thought this was going to pass. And it's dark as night. I mean, it's the middle of the afternoon, but there's so much ash, so much smoke in the air, as if it was nighttime at 4 p.m. Nighttime.
Weird.
In the, just the middle. Yeah, yeah. These rumblings in the distance, people 20 miles away, 30 miles away, reporting it sounds like artillery fire or, you know, distant gunfire. And there's lightning going on because the air is charged. And there's, I mean, it really just must have been absolutely horrifying. At 10:02 a.m., on that Monday morning, August 27th, 1883, after weeks of building tension, there was, I mean, my words are just going to fail here. There was a massive explosion, but it was the most massive explosion that had ever exploded, that to this day, we do not have a record of a bigger
than that,
more violent, more intense explosion. As I say, it's off the charts in terms of human hearing. When Krakatoa erupted, there are reports that sailors on ships 40 miles away suffered ruptured eardrums.
Okay. Oh my God! Do your ears bleed?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you were standing next to it when it would kill you. I mean, it would just, you would not survive it. Just the sound alone at a distance of 100 miles away, they recorded pressure changes that equate to 172 decibels. Okay, so now remember, I said standing next to a jet airplane, 150 decibels, okay? This is 100 miles away, more than 20 times that powerful, okay? Just unimaginably loud. I've read estimates that, you know, just working backward, estimates that it could have been as high as 310 decibels if you were standing. I mean, it's just, it's meaningless. It's really meaningless. We can't comprehend what that loud of a sound would be. And I want to emphasize here, this really is the loudest. I mean, more than warfare, more than industrial accidents, atomic bombs. Like, this is truly the loudest event in human recorded history. It is estimated as much as 13% of the globe could hear this sound. There are reliable, confirmed, multiple reports of it being audible almost 3,000 miles away. Imagine an explosion in New York that you could hear here, Karen. Like, that's there were, of course, many thousands of people who died. Most from the tsunami effect of the volcano. Catastrophic, absolutely catastrophic. The pressure wave from this sound, this massive, unfathomable explosion, the pressure wave, all right, traveled the Earth, hit its antipode, bounced back,
and came back,
hit itself again, bounced back to the antipode, hit itself again, came back again. There are spots on the globe where they had barometric equipment that recorded 7 spikes from this explosion.
Wow.
Yeah, just on its way out and back, just ricocheting, you know, around our planet. This is, none of this really can fit into the little one-line factoid of loudest event in human history, which is kind of cheery. And it's like, oh, you don't really think about how many, many thousands of, lives were destroyed here. I came away from this just in awe, frankly, of the power of the volcano. And no other volcano that has erupted in modern times even comes close. It doesn't even come close. So forget surpass. Forget even approaching. I mean, Mount St. Helens, you know, Mount Pinatubo, any of these, nothing even comes close. Yeah, it's just, it is truly a one of a kind event in history.
That's done, right? Krakatoa after...
Well, it isn't done, Karen. No, it's not done. All the energy down below, those tectonic plates, they're still moving. They're still moving 4 inches a year, 4 inches a year, 4 inches a year. So as you know, volcanic activity can produce islands. We have, you know, Hawaii, many other examples of this. So it's just a matter of when does it break the surface, right? So after the 1883 explosion, you know, kept on growing. By 1927, out of the caldera, so, you know, the remnant of the volcano, out of there had grown a new island, volcanic island, named Anak Krakatoa, or Child of Krakatoa. That grew to over 1,000 feet tall. Itself started having volcanic activity. In fact, fairly frequent. There was a minor eruption in 2020. Just last month, in February 3rd, Anak Krakatoa started another eruption cycle, and it is putting out smoke, ash, gases. I mean, they're keeping an eye on it. They're much better prepared in terms of monitoring and the ability to get people out early. But there are still many thousands of people who live right there. I did not realize this. I have to admit, I was ignorant until doing my research, that the Krakatoa caldera, the Anak Krakatoa, is what was responsible for the Indonesian tsunami in 2018. If you guys remember December 2018, the horrific tsunami there.
Yeah.
That was...
Oh, it's because of the activity.
It was
there.
Because Anak Krakatoa was, the way it was being formed was kind of lopsided in a way, and they had been keeping an eye on it for a few years, in fact, worried that a huge chunk of it might slide off into the ocean and trigger a tsunami. And in fact, that's exactly what happened, is that a huge portion of it slid, triggered a tsunami. And, you know, even with the advance warning that we have, it's not a lot of warning. Again, tsunamis just really cause a lot more damage than the volcano itself. But no, Karen, Anak, Krakatoa, it is not done. I don't think it'll be done in our lifetimes. We're just going to have to learn to live with it. Yeah.
All right. On that cheery note, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hi, I'm not LeVar Burton. You're listening to Good Job Brain, but you don't have to take my word for it.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about things that are loud.
That's right. And actually, you know, Colin, that segment actually reminded me of there's an essay in one of the Penn and Teller books by Penn Jillette when he talks about NASA's successful quantifying of comedy timing, which is he was invited to watch a space shuttle launch from as close as you're able to get, which is like 3 miles ish away, and he's like, you see this, you're so far away from it that you see the space shuttle taking off and it's a big, you know, burst of fire, and you can't help it but you start to think like, huh, that's funny. You'd think there would be some noise. And the second that your brain gets to the word noise, that is when you are hit with the loudest thing you have ever heard in your life. You know, sound waves that knock people over, sound waves that knock things off the table, you know. And that's why you can only get so close to a space shuttle.
Yeah.
So when I think of loud, I think of turning things up to 11. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the film, this is Spinal Tap, there's a scene in which there's a character who shows off a guitar amplifier whose volume knobs do not stop at the traditional 10, but can be dialed up to 11, which is one louder. So I have a quiz all about the number 11, the loudest number, one louder than 10. It is a write down quiz. So get your pen and your paper ready to go.
I like that 11 is the loudest number. Yes,
it's the loudest number. It's
also I appreciate Chris. We know you're sick and you're still here.
I'm getting over something and my voice is just totally shredded. But I'm okay.
You're a trooper.
Yes. So your first question. I'm going to keep score for you guys. The loudest quiz of all time, because everything has something to do with 11. Question number one. In Spinal Tap, which character delivers the line about it going up to 11 and how that's one louder? What's the name of the character that delivers that line?
Name of character or actor?
Name of the character. Name of the character. Man. Yeah.
This is like whatever BTS is for me, Spinal Tap is the inverse.
Yeah. Right.
But there's only 4 people in Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
And one of them always changes. Okay.
All right, answers up. Karen says Nigel. Dana has written very small.
Nigel St. James.
Nigel St. James. Colin put Nigel Tufnel. Now, Colin is the correct. Most, right? It is Nigel Tufnel. I did not. This is tough. This is a tough one because it's like, Karen, I want to give you the point too, but then Dana, you put additional incorrect information.
So do we want to go on asterisk?
Yes. Okay. Sure. I'll give you.
All right.
I'll give each of you an extra. I'll give you you each get an extra. Colin gets the point.
I'm curious, Colin. Can you name the other members or the other character names in Spellcat?
I mean the three permanent members, main, if you will. Yeah, sure. There's Nigel Tufnell. There's David Saint Hubbins, which is maybe where Dana got the saint from. Yeah, David Saint Hubbins.
That's such a good name.
Yeah, David Saint Hubbins. Yeah. The patron saint of quality footwear, of course. And there was Derek Smalls. Harry Shearer.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Harry Shearer. Okay. Yep. Nigel Tufnell's
Christopher Guest.
Yep.
Michael McCain. Is David St. Hubbins. Exactly. Yes.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. Get ready to put some points on the board. The record for the most Oscars ever won by a single film is 11. This record is shared by three films. For 1 point each, name them. Okay. I'll reread as you're writing. The record for the most Oscars that the Academy Awards ever won by a single film is 11. This record is shared by three films. For 1 point each, name them. You may remember the most recent, maybe more than the others, when it, you know, sort of famously like tied the other two. But I don't know. We'll see. All right, I'm going to ask you to.
Hold on.
We don't have all day. You know what I mean?
Mm.
All right. All right. Let's get some answers in 5. Mm. 4, 3, 2, 1. Karen says Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Dana.
I said Shawshank Redemption, Philadelphia, Chicago.
Okay. And Colin says
Titanic, The Godfather, and I'm grasping at straws. I didn't get a third. Yeah.
All right. So Karen and Colin each get 1 point. Karen is correct that Lord of the Rings, Return of the King won 11 Oscars. Colin is correct that Titanic has won 11 Oscars.
Oh.
And no one got the third one, which I kind of sort of expected because it is Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur
also had 11 Oscars. Yes. All right. Question number 3. The formal end to the hostilities of World War I took place famously at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of what year? Now, closest to the year is going to get the point.
World War One.
The formal end to the hostilities of World War I took place at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of which year? Person who writes down the year that is closest to the year will get the point.
Man, I'm so embarrassed.
Formal end too.
Hostilities.
I don't know. Sometimes
Okay, I'm gonna give you guys 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 answers up. Dana has written 1917. Colin has written 1919. Karen has written 1929. Dana and Colin both get a point because the answer was 1918.
I was like, do we add some time? Because for all the diplomacy, sure. I was like, all right.
The Grim Grotto is the 11th entry in which series of books? The Grim Grotto is the 11th entry in which series of books?
What series of books is that long?
That is a very good question, Karen.
The Grim Grotto
is the 11th entry in which series of books?
All right. Got it.
All right.
Man.
Okay. All right. Answers up. Karen says Nancy Drew. Colin says Goosebumps. And Dana...
Lemony Snicket's series of unfortunate events.
Dana,
I like your answer,
point.
Karen. Right. Without Chris even saying it, my first thought was Nancy Drew. Yep. So I don't know.
All right, let's keep it to another book series. Are you ready, folks? What is the name of the 11th book in Sue Grafton's Alphabet Mystery series?
Oh man!
What is the name of the 11th book in Sue Grafton's Alphabet Mystery series? If you talk too much thinking it out, you might give the other contestants here a clue. Mm-hmm. So,
okay,
try to work it out in your brain if you can. Karen, I believe, has an answer. Dana has something written down. Colin is working on it. The name of the 11th book in Sue Grafton's Alphabet Mystery series.
I'm not going to overthink it. Answers up.
Oh my goodness. All right, Karen says K is for killer. Dana says
I had K is for killer, and then I was like, is it kill or killer? And then I went with kill, and now I'm like, I think kill? It was killer.
Yeah. And Colin has written K is for killing. The answer is K is for killer.
I scratched yeah. the off.
I was back and forth. I was like, oh, what is it? I was like, it's not just yep. kill. That's too easy, is it? Yeah.
It's K is for killer.
I mean, yep, they're yeah. all easy. That's why we could guess. That's what yeah. I was like.
Yeah. Now, if you can't imagine how the, yes, Sue Grafton's Alpha Mystery Series started with A is for alibi and went on that way. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. The maple leaf on the Canadian flag has 11 points on it. The Canadian $1 coin has 11 blanks.
Oh.
The maple leaf on the Canadian flag has 11 points on it. And the Canadian $1 coin has 11 of these. So, answers up. Karen says stars. Dana says stars. And Colin says loons.
I almost was going to put loon footprint.
The Canadian dollar does in fact have a single loon yeah. on it. That's okay. why it's referred to as a loony. But the Canadian $1 coin has 11 sides.
What?
It has 11 oh. sides.
No! Oh. That's yes. so weird.
Yep. It is like one less than a dodecagon.
Whoa.
Yeah. What do you even call a 11 sided thing?
That's a really great question.
An undecagon.
So you know what? It's so you can call it an undecagon, but actually they call it a hendecagon.
A hendecagon.
Undecagon is also acceptable though, but they like hendecagon.
Hendecagon.
From the Greek for 11, I believe. So the loony is a hendecagon. It's the title of my murder novel. Yeah. Okay. 11 is a prime number. Mm-hmm. How many prime numbers come before it?
Oh man, do we count? Okay.
11 is a prime number. How many prime numbers come before it?
I feel like it's a trick.
All right.
Oh,
Karen says 3. Dana says 5. And Colin says 4. Colin Whoa. Is correct. Two, three, 5, and 7 are the prime numbers that are lower than 11.
Man, and one doesn't count as a prime.
One is not a prime number. The definition of a prime number is that it has two factors, itself and one.
I can't believe all right. So
I think I've been keeping proper track of everybody's scores, but we'll.
Okay.
On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me what? I just want the one from the line from the song from 11, because technically the on the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave me the 11s and then
right,
also
plus the 10s. Yeah, right.
So you
right.
get a right. Yeah. So by the end of it, you have 12 partridges and 12 pear trees. You don't even. Yeah. On the 12th, on the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave me 11. Yeah. What?
I feel like with this song, I know like the first, 6, 7, and then I know maybe the last one, but yeah, 8, yeah, cold. Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's
the,
why, the yeah, that's
8,
why.
9, I 10, yeah. 11, man, that is just yep. a minefield there.
Was, yeah. Yeah. I made it my goal last year to learn all 12.
All right.
All right.
So I'm pretty confident.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. I'll let Karen put hers up first.
Yeah. Yes, okay. All right.
Oh.
11 pipers piping. Dana says lords a-leaping, and Colin says nothing. Karen is correct.
No. 11. I put
pipers
piping. I'm sorry. It's yes, you put maids a-milking. So no points for this next question, because this next question is, I swear, the Stephen King novel 11/22/63 is about a character who goes back in time to prevent what event? don't write anything down. It's the assassination of JFK. Now, is that the first time that that's ever happened to somebody on the show, that the Trivial Pursuit card literally was a question they were going to ask in a quiz?
It's happened to me before.
The odds of that are crazy.
It happened to Dana, I think, last year.
Yeah.
I remember, man, oh, good job, Brandon. It was about like the cricket match between the the most watched cricket match.
Right.
And then it was our show, I think, but about television, and Dana had a quiz about most watched events on TV. Yeah. And so it was like, it was structured differently,
right,
but it
right,
was
right.
like talking about the same
talking
thing.
About the same thing.
Interesting.
According to the movie Swingers, when playing blackjack, you always do what on 11? You always blank on 11. All right. How are we doing? Okay. Dana says...
just hit.
Dana says hit. Karen says double down. Colin says double down. You always double down on 11.
I've never watched that movie before.
It's great. Jon Favreau, very, very young.
Yeah.
Great movie. It was, yeah.
Vince Vaughn, very young.
It does hold up?
It does hold
up. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just two more questions.
Not on 11?
No.
Oh, but I guess we skipped one.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't have them numbered. Okay. What is the title of a 2007 documentary by Leonardo DiCaprio, a 1988 children's book by Graham Bass, an entry in the Women's Murder Club book series by James Patterson, and a 1995 video game by Virgin Interactive Entertainment? What is the title of a 2007 documentary by Leonardo DiCaprio, a 1988 children's book by Graham Bass, an entry in the Women's Murder Club's book series by James Patterson, and a 1995 video game by Virgin Interactive Entertainment?
I didn't know about the documentary. But I am for sure.
Yeah, four ways in here.
None of them are ringing a bell. I'm just going to be taking a guess here.
Interesting. The title of a... It's an entry in the Women's Murder Club book series by James Patterson, a 1995 video game by Virgin Interactive Entertainment, a 1988 children's book by Graham Bass, and a 2007 documentary by Leonardo DiCaprio. They all share the same title. Mm. How many of you? I know Karen knows it. So all let's see. Colin says 11th Hour. Dana says the 11th Hour. And Karen says the 11th
Darn
Hour.
It.
Wow. Across the board. Yes, Woo. They're all called.
Wow.
There's a lot more stuff called the 11th Hour, too.
That just colloquially means like close to the end, yeah. Right? Like time is ticking.
Right, yeah. Right, right. It's 1 hour to midnight. Yeah, like the last minute. Okay. I'm going to read off the points before we go to the last question.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
I have Colin with 6. I have Dana with 3 and Karen with 5. All right, folks. It is anybody's game right now, because this is the question. In the 2001 film Ocean's 11, a group of 11 criminals team up for a major heist.
Yes.
In 1 minute, name as many of the actors playing the titular 11 as you can in 1 minute. Go! Go! Okay.
Do you need full names?
Yeah.
Okay. I need a new paper. Shoot. Okay.
Now, you have a whole minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you your 30-second warning, you know, when we get there.
Okay.
In this minute, you're trying to name as many of the actors who play members of the titular 11 in the film Ocean's 11. Not the old 1950s one. I'm not doing that to you. I mean, the more recent one.
Man, all right.
30 seconds remain.
Oh, I don't know.
Hopefully, by once we get to the end of this, you'll have sort of exhausted the ones that come easily to you. This is 1 point each of 10 seconds left.
Oh.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right. I know their character names. I just don't know their...
Okay.
Oh, you timed it.
Oh, yeah. All right, answers up. Let's see what we got. Let me get back to my document so I actually can check these.
All right. Colin, those aren't their full names. Those are initials and last names.
You read it to me.
I have 10. I have 10 names written.
Okay, all right. What do you got?
Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Yes.
As Rusty.
Got it.
Yep.
George Clooney as Danny.
Yes. Yes.
Got it.
I got the twins, Scott Conn and Casey Affleck.
Yes. Oh, yes. That might Scott be the Conn. Difference right there. That might be the difference right there.
Bernie Mac.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Elliot Gould.
Yes.
Scott Elliot Gould. Got
Carl
Gould.
Reiner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt Damon.
Yes.
Got Matt Damon.
And Ching Shao Bao.
Oh my God.
Really good.
I
mean,
I hacker guy. I did not.
And how could I forget Bernie Mac? He's so early in the movie. Yeah.
Okay. And Dana.
I got
how many did you get?
I got 6. What was the last one that Karen didn't get? I'm
sorry. Oh, okay. Of course. Livingston Dell was the name of the character, the hacker guy. And the actor was Eddie Jemison.
Man, I would have not.
So that is astonishing. So, okay. Well, Karen has run away with this one. Actually, it was close. I mean, Colin had 13. Karen ended up getting 15 points.
This is like the class where the final is 90% of the score, right? It's like, well, why did I bother doing all that homework?
Yeah. The rest of it is
points for this last question.
Was a lot of points.
So it was 11 points for last question possible. So
okay,
you know, there's no prize. So congratulations.
All right, good job, Chris. Thank you.
Oh, thanks
for the loudest quiz.
Hey, Matt, did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope, never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
My turn for this last segment. So, working from home while raising children, I realize all those things kind of force you to have a routine. So every weekday morning, my husband and I, you know, we're in like full go, go, go mode. Like since we wake up, right? We're like, we wake up and it's, oh, okay, you get the baby ready. You did a potty train. You change the clothes. I'll prep the breakfast and get her like little school bag ready. And it's just like so hectic. And then after all this, we get in the car. We're like, okay, we got to go drop her off at preschool. You know, after drop off, we have this like half hour to ourselves and before our work day starts. You know, back in the home office, this half hour is very precious to us. We're driving back home. We usually stop at Pete's to get coffee. And like the very normal people we are, after we get our coffee, we tune in very seriously to a particular radio station with the pure intent of winning the call-in radio contest that they hold every day in that time slot. I'm not going to tell people what it is because I don't want your competition. But between me and my husband, we've won a lot. Like, I mean, they're not like big prizes or anything. They're like Lindsey Buckingham tickets that we're going to give to Chris. Thanks, or man. A promo pack, but really it's just garbage from their office and it's like a PBS DVD or something. You know, like it's not very high stakes. But let me tell you, there are a few moments in my life where I can distinctively like remember feeling the high and the rush of winning. I think one of them was like 5 million years ago when we won the NorCal champion trivia.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like easily one of the highlights of my life. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Like I remember that so clearly. These radio calling contests, it like I can live off the high for a week. I'm just right. Like it just makes me feel instantly so good. Quick disclaimer. We're not like annoying and we call in every day. We'll tune in every day, but we won't call in every day because we don't want to be
you'll leave annoying. Some prizes for the rest of the listeners. Yeah.
Yes.
How many times have you won so far?
Oh, like throughout my lifetime, probably more than 20
on
times.
This station.
Oh, 5 or 6.
Okay. I thought you were saying you won 20 times. And then it's like, did they tell you you weren't annoying or did you decide you weren't annoying?
I'll address that later, but I'll one of the things is for most states, you can't win within 30 days.
Again. Oh, okay. So you're just
so after you win, you have to kind of wait for
a cool down period.
But we'll get there in a bit. So some stations have really awesome kind of like morning call-in games. Usually I call in for trivia. But there was one station that used to have a game called The Two Spirits. They play a sound of someone screaming and you have to identify it, if it's a sound you hear from like the spirit of the Halloween store, skeleton decor, and they make like a wailing noise, or if it's heard at a Spirit Airlines airplane gate.
Oh my God.
Is that funny?
That's so good.
And it's like, it's really hard. You really don't know. Is it a wailing skeleton or is it a person
getting on Spirit
drunk on Spirit Airlines? And the one I did that was really fun and challenging, they would play 1 second clip of a song, three songs in a row.
I've heard these before.
And you have to correctly identify. I've only done it once. Because, you know, you have to solve it so quickly and you have to be the right caller, yeah. right, to get selected to
right,
be on air.
Right.
So I've won that once. It's hard, but it's not as hard as the contest I'm about to tell you in a story. So in 2020, lockdown year, Singapore's Gold 905, their radio station, Gold 905 held a call-in puzzle contest, very similar to the one I was describing. It's called the Celebrity Name Drop. And the big prize, 10,000 Singaporean dollars, which is like $7,000 US dollars. So it's huge. So the puzzle was the Gold 905. They pieced together 14 celebrity sound bites. One word each spoken by 14 different celebrities. So when you piece it together, it like reads out like a ransom note of an audio promo message. You know, it
okay.
says like,
okay.
Gold 905, the station that sounds good and makes you
right,
feel
right.
good. You know,
Yeah.
That's really hard.
14? That one word.
You had to call in and you had to get selected to be the caller on the air and then give your answer. And so this took weeks. Yeah. People were piecing info together after like from like failed attempts because people were getting it wrong. So like it's almost like everybody's kind of trying to get all this information.
Crowdsource it
a little Wordle-ish.
Yeah. Then comes Mohammed Shalahan, a railway worker for the Singaporean Railway, father of three, and quite the quiz enthusiast. He had successfully called in, but he did not have the 14 celebrity solution completely right. So him and his wife have been like poring over the voices, you know, figuring it out. And finally, he felt confident that he had the full set. So on April 21st, Mohammed called in, very confident with the solution, got through, got selected, and then the DJ asked him for his solution. And the solution he gave was Tony Hadley, Madonna, Maggie Wheeler, Ellen DeGeneres, Jim Carrey, George Clooney, David Bowie, Belinda Carlisle, Julie Andrews, Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Meryl Streep, Michael Bublé, Rebecca Lynn. That's a lot of voices. And he's pretty confident this is his right set. And the DJ said, no, you only have 13 correct names. Keep working at it. So, okay, well, he's like, man, I'm real close. Which one is wrong? Then 2 weeks later, listener Jerome Tan called in, gave his answer. Jerome was declared the winner because he got all 14 right. He also gave the same exact set of answers as Mohammed did 2 weeks ago.
What?
Oh, no.
Listeners on social media, on Facebook, were like, wait a minute, this guy said the same answer as the same answer set that Mohammed gave. What is the deal with that? Mohammed contacted the radio station, and get this, this was their response. We have reviewed the relevant audio clip of your call, and our decision remains final. The name Tony Hadley had been mispronounced by you. They said that he mispronounced the name Tony Hadley, and therefore he only technically got 13 out of 14 right. So who is Tony Hadley? Do you know? Does anybody know Tony
Hadley? Did not ring a bell.
Most famous for being the lead singer of the quintessential 80s British band Spandau Ballet. Singer of True. People online, radio fans, people were furious. They're like, this is not fair. It was the same answer. MediaCorp is the name of the big media conglomerate, parent company of Gold 905 radio station. And they would not budge. And I heard the clip.
Okay. I'm so curious. Yeah.
Let me tell you, it's like my cousins, they grew up in New Jersey and still live in New Jersey. And they pronounce like my name with a New Jersey accent. They say Karen instead of Karen. Karen, yeah. Karen. Anyways, I'm going to play the clip. It's going to play three times. Okay. It's a comparison. It's comparison. Mm. The first voice is Muhammad reading Tony Hadley. And then the second is Jerome reading the winning answer, Tony Hadley. So it's going to play three times.
Okay.
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley.
Also, I want to point out, this is Singapore. There are four official languages in Singapore.
Yeah, it's multilingual.
One of them is English. You know, I want to make it clear, Singaporean English is their English. It is not someone who spoke a different language and now they're speaking English. Like the way Singapore English sounds, a lot of us have seen Crazy Rich Asians. That is, the Singapore English is their...
That's standard. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Is pronunciation so important? Because there's no other famous Tony Hadley. You know,
it's like... Exactly. Yeah.
That's true. I'm not mistaking someone else for it. I find it to be close. I find it like my cousin saying Karen instead of Karen. You know, Super Mario.
Yeah, right.
As a bit of a long shot, Muhammad's wife very, very smartly suggested that he should go straight to the source. Tony Hadley himself. So Muhammad emailed Tony Hadley's manager or managing team. And guess what? Tony Hadley emailed back. Not only did he write back, he recorded a video of himself. Mm. Remember, this is pandemic, so everybody's like at home, right?
Right.
Nothing to do.
Everyone's reachable.
Yes, because we're at home. Yeah. So he made a video of himself, and this is, I edited the clip, but this is kind of the gist, and I will play it for you.
Hi, Muhammad Shellahan. This is Tony Hadley here from the UK. As far as I'm concerned, you pronounce my name absolutely correctly. Tony Hadley, you might have said Hadley, it's slight accent, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, you said my name correctly. Listen, all the very best and see you hopefully when we get to Singapore. All right, take care, Muhammad. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, if the guy says it,
what a nice guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It sounds like Hadley a little bit when he says it with his accent.
Yeah, right. So obviously this video was released into the wild. MediaCorp, again, a large parent media company. After this video, after people flooding their social media, after multiple newspapers and sites picking up, you know, the story and the drama, they were still doubling down on their
stance. They issued a statement. We refuse to be shamed.
Yeah. And make again very clear, this is not our fault. This is his fault for his pronunciation. But then they kind of added very publicly that even though Muhammad was wrong, they're going to throw him a bone and give Muhammad a smaller prize as a, quote, token of appreciation for his exceptional commitment to the contest and loyal support.
I hate how patronizing that is. You're so loyal to our contest. It's like, no, I'm angry at your contest.
I actually won.
Money.
People were not having it. It made it worse. They're like, oh my God, this is so insulting.
Yeah.
How much bad publicity is $7,000 worth to them? You know? I mean, goodness.
This all happened actually pretty quickly, over 2 months. Probably MediaCorp, tired of all of this, they finally publicly apologized to Muhammad, decided to reward him the full amount as he so deserved. Anyway, so that's a great story. And to wrap this up, I just want to share some of my general tips and best practices to winning your local radio contest call-in. As a disclaimer, people will always find a way to exploit or to cheat the system one way or another. We are not about that life. Right. So I'm not going to tell you to set up bots and get burner phones. You know, these are
good faith efforts.
Yeah, these are Rod Stewart tickets. You know, they're not like really high stakes prizes. They're just kind of
PBS DVDs that were in the office.
Yeah. They literally just probably like, what do we have lying around the office that we can send to these people? Number one, know what time certain contests are. For us, it's at exactly this time every day they usually do a contest. It's probably not the same contest or the same giveaway. Have the call-in number saved, you know, saved to a contact.
In your contacts.
The biggest mistake that people do is they call in too early. Because you hear the DJ saying like, hey, give me a call now and play trivia, blah, 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 you know, blah, blah, blah. You hear like, oh, okay, I got to call in now. No, you have to wait until they're done reading the sentence. Because chances are, it's the DJ who's doing this. So if they're reading out a thing, they're not also multitasking, trying to open up the phone lines and pressing a button. You just kind of wait until they're done saying their sentence. I don't know. My husband swears he can hear when they put down the headphone. You keep calling until you're sure that you lost. Like sometimes you get a busy signal. Sometimes it cuts out. Just keep calling, keep calling, keep calling. And if you win, you probably can't win another prize in most states for another 30 days. So obviously,
Karen, do you put in your calendar when you win so you know when your 30 days is up and you can call again?
No, but I kind of know it in my head.
Because it made your day really good. You said you were thinking about it for the rest of the week. So you're like,
it's not every day that you win Lindsay Buckingham tickets. I mean, that's going to stand out. Yeah.
That you can give to Chris.
Which again, I do
appreciate. We'll happily take them. Yeah.
It's my husband who won.
Oh, okay.
Because I just recently won. So I'm like, okay, now you have to call in. At the end, he's like, wow, I won. And they hung up the phone and we're driving. And he turns to me, he goes, who's Lindsay Buckingham? Well, that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned stuff about Krakatoa, about Eleven, about
Tony Hadley.
Yeah.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Also, we have a very active Facebook fan group of listeners like you. Lots of fun. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast, Food with Mark Bittman, and The Explorers podcast. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
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 Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.